Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason, the creator of the Online Army Showcase, and I'm running solo on the podcast this time around. So I want to give you some ideas on how you can kind of customize Halo action clicks. This episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome to episode 21 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Online Army Showcase at army.rocklesoftware.com. And if you think back, well, really shortly back to episode 20, myself and Ryan did a full review of Halo Action Clicks. So I've had a little bit more time since then to play it. It's been a few busy weeks, but what I've been working on is actually a few kind of scenarios here. We're going to go over just a kind of quick example scenario to give you some ideas of some things to toss out here. Also, I'm going to show you how a slight improvement to make to the figures to make some of them a little more playable. And by playable, I mean easier to use when you're kind of clicking the dials. And finally, how about making your own maps? I mean, I think there's 8 different maps that they give you in the various boosters, but they're all kind of similar. So what if you want to put your own textures on or create your own layouts? Maybe you can create some 3D terrain objects. So I kind of show you how to do some of that stuff all on this episode. So let's get started first with talking about how you can kind of make some slight improvements to the figures. Some of the figures, they're kind of chintzy when it comes to turning the base. They almost feel like you're going to snap the figure off when you turn the base. So that's this little demonstration I got here. We'll show you how to make it a little bit easier to use those kind of figures. So let's take a look. You may notice that some of the Halo Action Click figures that the way they're attached to their base is kind of chintzy. Like, I'm specifically referring to the flying guys, like the Elite Ranger here. I've got the drone over here also, where they're attached to the base with a clear plastic rod. So in order to turn the base to, you know, inflict damage to them, you actually got to pinch that rod and kind of sometimes forcibly turn the base. It almost feels like you're going to snap the figure right off the base because it just seems like such a weak attachment. So I figured out a very simple fix to make it a lot better to use. And all you're going to need is some basic green stuff. Now, if you're not familiar with green stuff, it's kind of like an epoxy and molding putty. You can get it from just about any game store. Games Workshop will sell it, or even independent stores will sell Gale Force 9 branded green stuff. And it's actually called green stuff because it's obviously a two-part epoxy where you got a blue part and a yellow part, and when you mix them together, it turns, well, green. And that's where it gets its name from. So I got a pretty small blob here. You can see maybe the two halves combined together. You're looking at maybe about a half-inch diameter blob. And I like to twist it together to get it to turn nice and green pretty quickly. And all you're going to do is wrap it around the base of the figure, carefully not to cover up any lettering or the stat slot. And you're going to make it into what's going to look like a little rock when it's all said and done here with the drone. And therefore, when you grip the base to turn it, you're going to grip this little rock-like thing, and therefore it'll be a lot stronger to turn than just gripping this tiny little plastic rod. So, oh, fudge. Well, as you can see there, I don't remember from last episode, there's a point where I knocked a figure off the table and broke it off its base. Well, that was this Elite Ranger I'm working on right now. It just snapped off its base again, but I can go ahead and fix up the base anyway. Because all I'm really doing is I'm just squishing the green stuff around the base of the figure where the plastic rod attaches to the black base. And put it kind of in a mostly a triangle shape so that if you look at it from the side here, it's relatively flat. From head on, it's pretty wide so that there's two flat edges to easily grip the base when you're turning the dial. And that'll make it a lot easier to turn the dial for later on when you actually play into the figure, and you won't actually snap the figure off trying to turn the dial. So go ahead, and green stuff will probably take about 24 hours to let it completely dry. After it dries up, go ahead and put some coats of paint on, like maybe some dark grays or maybe a little bit of blacks. And eventually you end up with a little rock-looking thing here. So as you see, the fixed drone looks like he's jumping out of a rock. And therefore, it makes it easier to turn the dial. And the little patch still looks pretty nice for aesthetic purposes.
We're back now, so hopefully that little tip will help make your flyer figures a little more easy to turn the bases, so you won't feel like you're going to snap them off the base every time you go ahead and turn the dial. So let's get talking about some scenarios. Obviously, the base scenario they give you in the rules for Halo Action Clicks is basically a 5-on-5 death match where you race to 5 kills. You know, nothing too terribly challenging or, you know, super fancy. They just try to crank out, I guess. Obviously, WizKids want to go for a very simple gameplay, and they really did succeed at that portion of it. And, of course, there's a lot of ideas you can draw from the Halo video games. You always got Capture the Flag, Oddball, my favorite, you know,
There's that old race game that they had back in Halo 1 and something similar kind of in Halo 3-ish, I guess. I haven't had time to play the multiplayer Halo 3 yet. So, obviously you can draw from that, but also one neat thing with the board game, the stuff you can do with this board game you obviously couldn't do in the case of the actual video game. Well, for example, obviously the whole thing controlling multiple figures, you obviously in the video game is first-person shooter, you're kind of limited to that way. But in addition, you can enter, you can obviously from creating your own maps to, and kind of organize them differently, to obviously entering, to adding new rules that you wouldn't be able to do normally in the actual video game, actually, quote, changing the, quote, physics engine almost, if you'd say. So, what I've got here in front of me, I got a little rule sheet, just going to go over it very quickly, just to give you a very simple example of how you can kind of expand on the Halo multiplayer that they offer in the video game. Now, like I mentioned, my favorite game was Oddball. If you never played that in the Halo video games, how it works is essentially, it could be team-based, it could be free-for-all, but the way you win the game is you gotta pick up a actual ball. And at least in the Halo games, there's always some kind of skull. So here I've actually got, it's actually a little Warhammer 40k bit that actually came in my Tau Hunter Cadre box. Apparently if you pre-ordered stuff for the Warhammer 40k Apocalypse things, you got two extra plastic little bits things. They're called the 40k Apocalypse upgrades. And this one here is actually, I believe it's probably Chaos. It's a nasty looking demonic skull. I'm going to close the picture of that for you. But, so we're going to use that to represent the ball. Because obviously, you know, they always use a skull in Halo, in the various Halo games. So, the gameplay is very similar to Oddball in that the object is simply grab the ball and hold onto it for some set amount of time. In this case, it's a number of turns because it's not as a good idea to kind of have minutes of control in a game like this where, you know, one player could take longer on their turn than the other player and that just can get really messy. So basically, that's the basic rule. You run up, grab the ball, and hold it for a number of turns. But I've got an assorted other little alternate rules here to kind of add a little more strategy and depth to the game than what's offered in just the high, well, fun action-packed Halo 3 video game style play. So for team construction, instead of following the normal rules that you use for Halo action clicks, you mandate four figures and a total of 300 points. So it's a little bit smaller for us than what you normally play with. And now what you do there is after you get your four figures picked up, you're going to break them up into two separate squads. Now the reason you're going to do that, it doesn't matter how you divide them, you can do, you know, obviously, whoever, what two guys you think would work well together, because each turn you alternate, move in a squad. So basically one turn you're going to move squad A, then you're going to, next turn you're going to move squad B, then turn after that you go back to squad A, then back to squad B, and so forth, back and forth, back and forth. Throughout the entire game. So obviously the idea that you want to match up characters with, like, you know, basically maybe similar abilities or maybe complementary abilities depending on which strategy you want to go for. So at the beginning of your turn, if you currently control the ball, regardless of who on your team has it, you're going to score a point. Obviously you're going to play up a certain amount of points, maybe 5, 10, maybe more or less depending on the number of players that are involved in the game. I tested this out with two players, so that's ideally how you want to do it. I imagine you might have to adjust some scoring rules if you're going to have three or four people, because it can be pretty hard to hold on the ball for about four other turns. Well, you know, everyone else is coming at you trying to shoot at the one guy with the ball. So that's how that works. Obviously, you got your normal actions, move and shoot, shoot then move your one square, or just stand and attack. Nothing changes there. The one thing I introduce is the breakaway. Now, obviously, if you've played other Wizkids games before, such as MechWarrior, you're probably familiar with this tactic where essentially if you're next to somebody and you want to try to move away from them, you have to make some kind of dice roll to see if it's even possible. Now, obviously, if you play the Halo video games, you know this is not really something from the universe. You can easily run to someone, hit them, and then run away if you want without any problems. So I realize this change is not so much for any kind of, like, realism within the Halo universe. It's actually there to introduce a new type of strategy. So if you want to pin an enemy down, you basically race up one of your guys to them, and therefore when you're at any point during your movement, if you're in a space that's adjacent to an enemy unit and you want to move at all, you have to roll a d6. As a result of a 1, 2, or 3, you're stuck there and you can't move. On a 4, 5, or 6, you can move away. So keep in mind now that anytime you move adjacent to an enemy unit, even if it's in the middle of your move, you have to make this roll. So you can theoretically station guys at key choke points, or people basically either have to try to do a series of breakaway checks, or they have to use extra points to go all the way around to avoid the person. And then in the event that you're going to make an attack that turn, if you are adjacent to an enemy unit, you have to attack a unit you're adjacent to. So, therefore, obviously, also, if you fail your breakaway, you're stuck there next to this guy, and you have to shoot him. So this way, you can essentially use other people in your team to kind of act as a diversion to keep them from the opponents from getting to the ball carrier. So, like I said, it's not really in line with the Halo universe, but it just introduces more strategy into this game, which is never, ever a bad thing. So now let's talk about upgrade tokens. Upgrade tokens work basically the way they do in the normal game. You get one whenever you kill an opponent. But also, every time your opponent essentially, when your opponent scores a point, if their current point total is a multiple of 3, all other players get an upgrade token. So the idea here is if you're kind of leading the game, your opponents are going to be getting more and more powerful to face against you. So you got to keep that in mind, that it's going to become a little bit more difficult as you progress higher scoring in the game, assuming you're not taking mowing down the enemies left and right. But that way it makes it a little bit harder for someone to go ahead and run away with the game, though, of course, it's going to still be possible. Now, here's the interesting change added, all the portals. There are no actual spawn things or spawn tokens in this version. All the spawn tokens are going to become portals that are all linked. So you basically can jump around the board and quickly find a way to get around towards the ball carrier and attack them. So therefore, yeah, like I mentioned, we're using the little spawn tokens as the portals. I've got 6 of them out here. They follow the normal deployment rules of the actual spawn areas. So in this case, though, each player places 3 of them down. But just like these spawn tokens, they have to be at least 5 spaces away from all the other portals. And this is where it gets kind of crazy, because obviously when you move into a portal, you can jump somewhere else and then kind of pop out and try to start shooting people and taking them out. So here's how the portals work. They're really simple. Basically, when you're moving along, if you step into a portal, you're immediately transported to any of the other 5 that are available you want to. It doesn't really matter, you know, which one you go to. You can choose whatever one you want. And also, as soon as you step in a portal, you're immediately transported to another one. So in the event that, say, an enemy unit is adjacent to the portal you just stepped in, you do not have to make a breakaway roll in this case. So basically, you immediately appear at another portal, and you go ahead and you got to roll 2d6, because there's some fancy rules that apply to this that basically you could screw yourself over pretty good. So there's 4 things that could happen. Either you have a matter reorganization, which is a bad thing, no effect, which happens most of the time, and that's a good thing. You figure it could take some damage, or it just could be outright be obliterated. So on the 2d6 roll, in a result of 2 to 4, you're going to suffer matter reorganization, which I'll explain what that is in just a minute. On a 5 to 9, you're going to suffer no effect. So basically, you're going to go through the portal, and you're going to end up on the other side. You're fine. You continue your movement and whatnot. On a 10 to 11, you're going to suffer 1d6 damage to your unit. So that can be really nasty. And after you take the damage, if you're still alive, you can go ahead and keep moving as normal. And if you roll double sixes, full box cars, 12, your figure is instantly killed. It just somehow you get in the portal, just completely vaporized. So what matter reorganization is now, this allows the opponents to essentially choose a new figure for you. So just like in normal Halo action clicks, you got a reserve force. You may want to actually limit the point cost for that for this game if you want. It's not required, so it's kind of your choice if you want to do that. Or just, you know, normal where you can have as many figures as you want in your reserve force. But if you do get matter reorganization, a randomly chosen opponent gets to take that figure that you have and replace it with an equal value point figure from your collection. So essentially, so for example, here I got a 75-point unit, the Spartan with the 2 Magnums. So let's say he goes through the portal and gets matter reorganization. What happens now is your opponent gets to take this figure and find another 75-point figure, or essentially same cost figure, and replace it. So I can go back in here and let's see who's another 75-point figure I can pull out. See, I believe this Spartan here is 75 points. So if I wanted to, I go ahead, okay, I don't want you the dual magnets anymore. Let's go ahead and replace him with the guy with the battle rifle. So now the figure takes no damage. but it's now a different figure, and essentially just move it one space off the teleporter to some adjacent space, and away you go. However, let's say if you're in Reserve Force, you don't have any more 75-point units. What's going to happen now is you're going to have to... Your opponent's going to choose a figure of a lower point value. So essentially, you're going to move down 1 point level from 75 to, say, 50, or maybe it might be 125 to 100, whatever, and choose a figure from that point value. And basically, you keep going until either A, there's a valid unit at that point level, or you run out of figures. In the event you do run out of figures where it's just not possible to replace the guy, go ahead and just give him, say, 1d6 damage. So, and therefore, in a rare circumstance where you have no one that can potentially replace this guy, just give him some damage and that's... and continue on with the turn as normal. So hopefully that makes sense. If not, well, I'm going to put all these rules on an actual website on the Online Army Showcase, so I'll go ahead and put that in the show notes. It'll probably be army.rocklesoftware.com/portalball, but don't count me to that because I haven't made the site up just quite yet. Let's talk a little bit about the ball. Obviously, the game board is going to be four maps, obviously laid out in the square, just like normal Halo action clicks. So there's essentially four middle squares here. So what you're going to do is determine which square, one of the four middle squares, is going to have the skull at the start. For each map, roll d6. Whichever map essentially gets the highest roll, that's the map that's going to have the ball starting its square. Pretty simple. So now, to pick up the ball, all you got to do is move on the square. You can pick it up and keep running away if you want, or however you want to do it. Just move on the square, and the ball becomes yours. Now, obviously, just like normal Halo action clicks, if you have the ball, you can still attack, but you have to be in base contact. You have to be adjacent to an enemy. Because, when you pick up the ball, you lose your ranged weapon, but now you got this nice big skull to rail on with people with. So that's how that affects your character. But you can go ahead and just keep running around. And the one difference with this game versus how Oddball works in Halo is you don't lose this, well, you have to lose the skull when you die. But anytime the skull carrier actually takes a hit, they got to drop the skull and put it in an empty adjacent spot. So therefore, it's a little bit easier to actually knock the skull free of the opponent. You don't have to kill him. You just got to hit him and do amount of damage to them. So in the event they go through the teleporter and say they die with the skull inside the teleporter, just place the skull on an adjacent square to wherever the teleporter exit they chose was. No big deal, just like that. The last thing that's that changes is respawning. Now obviously Halo action clicks, you die, you can come back and respawn, not a problem. In this game, same case, except you must wait out 3 turns for a figure after they died. So maybe like Halo action clicks, when your character died, you had the choice to actually go ahead and respawn them next turn if you wanted to. You don't have that choice in this case. You actually got to wait 3 turns, and then finally, after 3 turns, when it's, basically their squad that they belong to's turn to go, you place them back on the board on any one of the actual portals. So you can pop out anywhere in the board you want. So it can be a nice little ambush to come out and start attacking. And since you're deploying the guy and not actually going through the portal, don't worry about all that stuff about rolling the 2d6 and trying to figure out the different bonuses. They don't need to do that for a respawn. That's only if you actually physically go through a portal from entrance point to an exit point. So now what this may cause is you may notice your squads may have only, say, one guy in it, or maybe even no guys in it. So in the case where you either have one guy in it, that time around you can only move one guy. Basically, it's a penalty for having dead guys. If you have nobody in the squad, the current active squad, you're out of luck, you forfeit your turn, and the opponent goes again. So you can really rack up points quickly if you have the ball and you blow away an opponent, both the figures in an opponent's squad. You can get maybe 2 or 3 points pretty dang quick. So keep that in mind. I believe that just brings me back to the last and final thing, which will be deployment. How that works is very simple. You each got a side of the board. Now see one player on this side, one player on this side. Go ahead and place your 4 figures any way you want along that side of the board to start off and go from there. So hopefully those rules made sense. If not, I'll definitely post them on the Online Army Showcase at army.rocklesoftware.com. Just check the show notes for that. So that's enough of a scenario talk. It's a very simple little scenario. Just get you thinking about some ideas you can do for this game. Obviously, the ideas are pretty limitless, and I'd love to see you guys post some really cool scenarios. Maybe do some even beyond the multiplayer. You know, I was talking about last time, I want to see campaign stuff. I'm working towards that. It will be a while, but I do want to work towards that. So if you've got something, let's see it. It's probably really awesome. So then, therefore, let's jump a little bit of topics here. Like I mentioned again, we can talk about building some actual maps. So let's go ahead and do that a little bit. So I got another little video to show you here. Show you a couple of different ways you can actually build these maps using just a computer and some free software. Okay, the first step for making a custom map for Halo Action Clicks, you need a nice background tile that you can overlay all your little terrain objects and little grid on top of it. So this is one way to do it, is actually take pictures of stuff. Now traditionally photographing is done during the day when there's a lot of light out, and we're actually, what is it now, almost 9 o'clock at night now, Ryan?
Just about.
Yeah, we got Ryan the camera here. So kind of watching the cops across the street, whatever they're up to, but... Yeah, so let's see if we get this done before we turn this thing into a real amateur show of cops. So what I'm going to do here...
We got the night vision for it.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. So we got the wired mics. Did we try to run off and probably like get wrapped around a tree or something? And then but anyway, so like I said, traditionally photographing is done during the day when there's light. But hopefully my camera's got a decent enough flash I can take some pictures. So anyway, so some good terrain, obviously, as well... natural terrain, if you're just doing like an outdoor setting, which often a lot of the fights in Halo take place in. So try to take some pictures of the grass, see if I can, hopefully I'll be curious to see how well this works at night. Hey, that worked pretty good. So I mean, like, you can take some pictures of the grass, it's a great little base terrain. Maybe some, like, even more wide out shots, because obviously you want to zoom out a little bit. Wow, that works pretty well at night. So yeah, so obviously you want to get nice wide shots because obviously the terrain covers a wide area. Or maybe even get crazy and diversified. Like, for example here, we've got some little pebbles I've got over here by the side of the house. You can kind of zoom in a little bit on them. So this way it almost looks like there's, like, obviously if you scale the image, it's going to be nice boulders instead of just little pebbles. And you see some crazy blue things in here. I'm not sure what those are, but we'll kind of ignore those. Or maybe, let's see if we can walk carefully over this way. Just, can you call on me?
As long as I'm not tripping over wires.
Yeah, you're tripping over my mic right now. I think it's still, hopefully it's still working. Or, you know, nope, tripping over my mic again here. So, basically, or maybe even take a picture of, say, the tree. The bark of the tree can make a really interesting texture that could be some alien world, because obviously Halo, in theory, could take place in a bunch of different alien worlds. So, once you've got your base terrain, you can go ahead and start making the actual maps. I'll show you how to do that in just a minute. But if you don't want to go out and take a picture, or maybe you don't have access to the digital camera, one thing you try to do is actually generate the base terrain using some kind of computer program, like, for example, Blender.
All right, guys, I'm going to show you now, just take the texture you've got, whether it be something from digital camera, a scanner, or in this case, I actually built this texture here with a program called Blender, which is sitting in the background. It's a 3D animation software that's free, open source, www.blender.org. I'd love to give you a full tutorial of how it works, but it's well beyond the scope of this episode and not simply possible to do in just a few minutes I got here. However, check out their website. They got some great documentation to do some really cool things. Once you learn how to do it really efficiently, this little thing here literally took me about 3 minutes to make. So, what I've got now is I've got this image opened up in a program called the GIMP. That's another free open source program. It's a pretty heavily advanced image editing software. You can see the little toolkit I'm dragging around right now. Unfortunately, it's a bit confusing to use, but I'll try to help you through the basics of it. So, the squares for Halo Action Click maps are 1.5 inches by 1.5 inches. So, what I did to start off was create a new image. It's 1.5 inches by 1.5 image. 1.5 inches by 1.5 inches. If you're familiar with photo editing, you'll know that the programs like this often operate in layers, where essentially there's one image drawn on top of another. And what I've done with the GIMP is I've added a new layer on top of the background. I'll turn the background back on to see the black thing just appeared. And all I did was basically draw first a white box around the edge to get a, you know, a 1.5 inch by 1.5 inch square. And then I just kind of outlined the inside of the box with a very small black line to kind of make it a little more distinct. So what I'm going to do is build these maps in five parts. Talking too fast. Build these maps in four parts, and each part can be a 5x5 square, so you can go ahead and kind of cut them out when you print them and paste them on a little tag board and build that cool little fold-a-map thing that I kind of showed off a little bit last time, which is at army.rocklesoftware.com/fix_halo_maps. So, do some quick math here. 1.5 inches times 5 is 7.5, so you need a 7.5 by 7.5 image for each of the four corners, the four sectors of the map. So let's go ahead and create a new image that measures well, 7.5 by 7.5. Is that okay? And now you see you got a nice square image here to work with. So we need to take the texture you've got and put in this image. So that's a pretty simple process of selecting the square region from this image. And again, you do that by using the square or the rectangle selection tool. Hold down shift and it'll draw a nice perfect square. Good old-fashioned copy and paste. And you probably have to scale this thing out so that it fills the entire region. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that quickly. I love to give you the details of how that works, but like I said, a lot of the details of this software is well beyond the scope of this episode. But both of these softwares are very well documented at their respective websites. You can find great tutorials online how to do all the little details of this. So now I've pretty much got to put a grid of lines through the map, just kind of like what I've got here. I've already done this thing once. Freaking program crashed on me. So I'm going to go ahead, and the screen capture program's going to crash. There's another free open source program, but that's a different story. So I'm going to go back to this little square here I made, the white and black square. I'm going to select all the entire image, and I hit the background because I want the transparency to kind of show through. So basically, when I copy this over the new image, you'll see the white line and all this checker pattern here. So using my finger to point out, which you obviously can't see. This checker pattern right here will basically not be there. You'll be able to see through it to the cool little texture underneath. So let's go copy and paste to see the little white square just appeared here. I'm going to go ahead and drag that into the upper corner of this image and begin to start building a grid of squares. So it's a bit of a tedious process, I know, but you're eventually going to go ahead and build a 5x5 square image here. Make sure you start in the upper left-hand corner and go across. And the final product will look something like this. So this is obviously only a quarter of the map. You maybe print this out four times if you want, or if you want to take some time, create four distinct maps, put on some tag board, away you go, and you've got a custom 10x10 Halo Action Clicks map.
So hopefully that gave you a few ideas and showing you how you can build some maps pretty easily and with using only free software. So I guess that's about all I got for you tonight. Just kind of want to show you a little bit how to customize some Halo. And of course, if you're a Warhammer 40K figure, you already know by now what's coming up, and that's Warhammer 40K Apocalypse. Probably by the time you receive this, should be about the Thursday before. Let me see. This should be out on the 11th. Which, at least according to my local store, I can't say for every store, but yes. The weekend from the 12th, the 13th, and the 14th is an absolute massive release weekend for the Warhammer 40K Apocalypse. My local store is actually going to be open to midnight on Friday, and I will probably be there for most of the day playing Warhammer 40K, because I actually do get the day off from work, which is really cool. So, considering that, hope get out there and start playing with the new Apocalypse rules. The backpacks, if you guys pre-order those, shipped last Wednesday on the 3rd, is what I was told. So probably by the time you hear this, you should have those in your hands. You should already have the rules looking over, ready to start building some tactics. So I'm really hoping next time around, we finally get a return in the world of Warhammer 40K. Now, it's probably the most popular topic in this podcast. Warhammer 40K episodes get a lot more downloads than anything else, so I want to get back to that. I just love to do one next weekend for the 40K Apocalypse stuff. Get Graham on this. But that's all kind of, I'm talking to Graham to get him back on and do more 40K stuff. So nothing's official. But I really want to have the next episode be Warhammer 40K Apocalypse. I mean, shoot. I'm looking here in the schedule. On the 14th, we're actually in a 4-store battle for 6 hours long from all the local, some local game stores all in the area here. So it's thought it'd be a lot of fun. I got a busy week in this case. As I mentioned on my blog, I got the Tau Hunter Cadre. 18 boxes of Tau stuff I got to put together. Because I need most of those together to actually get it over a 3,000 point list. So hopefully next time around we'll have a 3,000 point list for you. A little bit of tactics and probably a short review of the Warhammer 40K Apocalypse rules. So that's enough talking about that. That's really enough of me talking, period. I'm sure you might be sick of just hearing my voice all throughout the episode. So, thanks for watching. Once again, I'm Jason. Any questions, comments, or just hate mail, send them to jason@rocklesoftware.com. And I usually read that every now and then to see what's going on. Well, that's about it. So have a good night. See you again in about 2 weeks. And have a heck of a time playing Warhammer 40K Apocalypse. Have a good night.
Copyright 2007 Rocco Software, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Action Clicks and WizKids are trademarks of WizKids Incorporated. Microsoft, Bungie, the Bungie logo, Halo, the Halo logo, the Microsoft Game Studio logo, Xbox, Xbox 360, Xbox Live, and the Xbox logo are trademarks of the Microsoft Group of Companies. The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer, was acquired from www.pazevaudio.com.